listening to On the NBA Beat on Almighty Baller Radio, a show packed with nuanced perspectives on the league's most important stories.
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant to Shaq!
LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Jordan. Oh! A spectacular move by Michael Jordan!
And now, your hosts, Lauren Lee Chen, and the twins, Aaron and Joshua Fishman.
You are listening to On the NBA Beat, and more specifically, the voice of Aaron Fishman. I'm so glad you're tuning in. Riding solo here as far as hosts are concerned, but shortly I'll have company in the form of former Sheridan Hoops writer Jim Park, a close observer and longtime fan of the Golden State Warriors. As of interview recording time, the Warriors awaited the winner of the Cavaliers-Celtics series. However, now that Cleveland has defeated the Celtics, a third straight Warriors-Cavs final has been set. As we wait for the series to begin on June 1st, hopefully our in-depth discussion will help tide you over. First, let's better get to know our guest, Jim Park. Before Stephen Curry became a full-blown NBA superstar, as the 2011 lockout approached its end, Jim won a contest Curry was holding on Twitter. By singing and submitting the most unique and entertaining Christmas carol, he earned the right to have a one-on-one Skype session with Curry himself. After the two chatted for an hour, Jim decided he wanted to cover the Warriors, which he went on to do. Without further ado, let's begin. I want to start out, first of all, I really appreciate you coming on the show on such short notice too. Really helps out a lot. So, they're just such a dominant team, historically elite they've been for the last 3 years. But the Warriors have now won 27 of their last 28 games. And that comes after they lost 5 of 7 when they were still adjusting to playing without Kevin Durant. Besides everything, what would you say is clicking right now for Golden State?
Well, you know, what happened, I believe, was that Steph got reacclimated into the role that he always had, which is being the number one option. And I think initially when KD went down, there was maybe a little bit of an adjustment period where he maybe had to kind of rewire himself into being more of that dominant all-around guy that he's been for the last 3 years. And at some point, he started to get that groove back, and some of the guys that were missing, you know, on the bench, like Dago West, Matt Barnes, they acquired Matt Barnes while, you know, KD was out. They needed that extra body, and they got him. And he started making contributions. McCaw started making contributions, and so the bench started to play much sharper, and Steph got into a role that, you know, he was accustomed to for so long. And Klay also, Klay Thompson, once KD went out, he started going off because really he's the second scoring option for that team when KD's out. So he started playing with a lot more confidence, and Draymond, he always does his thing, and they went on a roll from there. And then I think KD, when he came back, he wanted to fit back into this, and it was relatively seamless, I think, this time. I think Curry really found himself while KD was gone, and he really hasn't looked back, even when KD did come back.
Did you end up reading the Ethan Sherwood Strauss column? I think it was his last one with ESPN, where he was talking about the marginalization of Stephen Curry and essentially about his fit with Durant and how he has struggled a little bit, and struggled is obviously a relative term because he's an amazing player having another stellar season, but just relative to the unbelievable season he had last year. Did you end up reading that at all?
Yeah, I did. I did. I don't remember it in full detail, but I definitely remember reading about it. It was a great piece.
What was your take on, and I won't ask you specifically, but just the kind of line of thinking that Curry is not able to shine as brightly as he was before? I mean, you always hear about sacrifice with great teams, and
Curry undoubtedly has had to sacrifice to a certain extent, but how do you see that shaking out so far?
Well, in the beginning, it was tough. I think he had trouble finding that balance of, you know, when to keep passing. And the other thing is, Steve Kerr started utilizing him a lot less in the sense that he kept taking steps off the ball. One of the things that Curry is so good at doing is moving without the ball and finding seams to get himself open. Or, you know, he's going around all over the place setting screens. He's trying to get switches and, you know, get his teammates an advantage somehow. And he's so good at those things that he was willing to kind of do more of those things than take over the offense. He kind of tried to defer to KD a little bit more in the beginning, to the point where people were kind of saying KD is undoubtedly better than Steph Curry. So he definitely went through this adjustment period, Curry, particularly if you remember that Christmas game against the Cavaliers. I think he got, what, like 13 or 11 shots off or something like that?
Yeah, and, something like that.
After that game, he publicly kind of called out the way he was being used. You know, kind of expressed his frustration about, you know, his lack of usage, his lack of, you know, not getting up enough shots, not being involved enough on the offense. He wanted to be more involved in the pick and roll situations where he absolutely thrives in. I personally thought it was almost criminal the way they were using him. He's just too good to use as like a glorified, what, J.J. Redick or something. You know, he's just too good. You can't keep him off the ball for that long. And that's what they did early on. And Curry started to kind of talk to the media about that. And that's something that he has never done, where he's openly kind of questioning what the coach was doing in terms of how they're utilizing him. So that's when, you know, it was like a major red flag. The average person, if they heard what Curry said, they'd be like, oh, that doesn't sound too bad. But anybody who's followed this team for a long time knows Curry is not the type of person who calls out anybody that's in the organization. And he did that with Steve Kerr.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. He's definitely been more diplomatic over the years with regard to happenings around the team. And so if he says something, however muted it is or subtle, you definitely are paying attention, and he definitely means what he says in those situations. But yeah, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you do believe, though, that they've adjusted, they're using him more on ball, and that's been a significant reason why they've been so dominant since?
I think so. He's looked a lot more like himself since that time when KD went out. He was still playing well, you know, at some point after he called out, you know, not being involved enough, Kerr started to allow him to play more pick and roll, you know, with Draymond and, you know, kind of jumpstart their offense that way. Because for this team, it's clear that, you know, as Curry goes, they go. It's not as KD goes, they go. That's 100% clear at this point. So, yeah, you know, I think he really started to get going at once he was back to dominating the ball.
So they're undefeated heading into the NBA Finals, 12-0. The biggest scare, I think everyone would agree, was Game 1 against San Antonio when the Spurs held that 25-point lead and then Kawhi Leonard went down with the ankle injury. I'm hoping to assess any level of concern that you may have that Golden State hasn't had that many close games in the postseason. You can argue that that's a good thing, that they've been so dominant. But compared to Cleveland, who's very likely to be their opponent in the NBA Finals, they haven't had very many close games. Cleveland has had a lot. Even though they only have one loss in the playoffs, every one of their games against Indiana was decided by six or fewer, so they're more accustomed to these closer finishes.
No, I'm not really concerned about that, because it's not as if this team hasn't faced adversity before. They've faced at various times throughout the season as well. It's just that they've just been rolling. It's really plain and simple. They just have such a dominant, you know, group of players that they haven't really faced many challenges. But game one against the Spurs, they won the game.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of how they did it, they were down by 20-something points. That's not easy to do. And it wasn't easy to do even down the stretch. What, 2 or 1 minute left to go? It was still, they were still down. So they fought against that adversity and came back and won that game too. So it's not as if these guys don't know how to handle themselves when it comes to crunch time. So I'm really not concerned about that.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Even though you look at their record over the last 3 years and they don't have that many losses, anecdotally, we can just think of so many examples of them falling behind double digits and just having that calm about them before they won the championship. And then maybe even after they won the championship, they had extra confidence that they already had that ring and that their confidence couldn't be shaken. But you just see a team that, at least from my perspective, that regardless of the circumstances of a game, they have that confidence, maybe even arrogance, that they're going to win, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, these guys, I think for the most part, they have a killer instinct, you know? They don't just let teams back into the game because they're up, you know, 15, 20 points. They have a preposterous record when they're up by 15 or more over the last 3 years or so. They lost, I think 2 years ago, they were undefeated when they were up by 15 or more. And then last year, I think they lost like one game where a team came back after being down 15 points towards the end of the season, you know, when the Warriors are trying to get to that 73 wins. And same thing with this year. When they had a 15-point lead, I think they only lost two games.
Yeah.
So when these guys, when they get out, you know, get out ahead, they don't look back. They don't let teams come back, you know. And the way they have it set up is it's set up in such a way where other teams have trouble coming back, because to start the fourth quarter, they have Curry sitting and they'll have KD starting, you know, the game in the fourth quarter. And, you know, he's just, usually he's eating, you know. Nobody can, the second unit guy can't stop KD, you know.
Yeah.
Let alone first guys usually. So that's a tall order for most teams to kind of try to overcome, especially when they're down. So you really have to play perfectly and try to get out ahead of the Warriors in order to have any kind of chance. Because if you get down, forget it. No chance.
Yeah, there isn't really much of a chance. What do you think commentators and some fans are missing with the argument that the playoffs are getting boring with all these blowouts?
Well, what the Warriors do on their end is, you know, it's like basketball heaven. You know, it's a beautiful thing to watch, right?
Yeah.
I think what a lot of people have an issue with, and I kind of do too in a way, is that it's not really competitive. You watch what's going on, and you know that the other team has no chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just, you can see it. You know, they have no chance of coming back, and it's like, even for those who are rooting for the Warriors, they're almost begging for the other team to make a run, so that, you know, there's at least some kind of excitement to the game. When you watch a game where one team is just utterly dominating, and the other team is not responding in a more competitive way, that's not really, fans don't want to see that. I think anybody who enjoys competition don't want to see one team just dominating. It's just not the same. It's like watching Team USA versus those, you know, foreign teams where, you know, there's not a shot in hell that they're going to be anywhere near close, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's happening in these playoffs when, you know, when Warriors are playing other teams. And I think that's what, you know, people mean when they say it's boring. And at times it does feel a little bit boring because it's so predictable.
But digging a little deeper, if not for that Kawhi Leonard injury, I think things would have been a lot more interesting. Obviously, still the Warriors would have been heavily favored in that series. But you look at the Spurs, they won only six fewer games than the Warriors this regular season. They also won two of the three head-to-head games. Do you agree with that, that would have been a lot longer of a series if Kawhi hadn't gone down and that we'd be having a little bit of a different conversation right now?
Maybe. We can't really, nobody can really say for sure because it didn't happen. And, that's really one of those what if situations. And you can only guess what would have happened. I would have predicted that the Warriors probably still would have won in five or six at most, six at most, because they would have adjusted. I don't know why, but they played Zaza way too many minutes. And I kind of have this personal issue when the coaching staff plays Zaza Pachulia too much. I don't like that because he kind of puts a cap on what they can be in terms of their potential on both ends of the floor. The Warriors are most lethal when they're running, when everybody, all five guys are, running constantly and playing quicker. And Zaza kind of automatically slows things down. He has his limitations and he's no rim protector by any means. So it kind of frustrates me when he plays too long, and he played way too many minutes in that game one for my liking. So I feel like the Warriors would have adjusted to their more optimal lineups. I mean, it's absolutely true that the Spurs, the Warriors weren't ready for that game one, and they probably would have lost that game if Kawhi stayed in the game. But I do think that overall, the Warriors, they have too many weapons, and you can't assume that the Spurs are gonna just run over the Warriors like that. That's, I would call that like a one game exception. It's the same way the Rockets dismantled the Spurs in their first game. There was no indication whatsoever, as we found out, of how this rest of the series would go.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I think all basketball fans wanted to see Kawhi Leonard out there, just such a great player on both sides of the ball. But who knows? You're right. It very well could have been a short series, even if he was out there. But we didn't get to see it, is the major takeaway.
I just want to say one thing about
Yeah.
Kawhi. He,
Go ahead.
I think we kind of got an idea of maybe it's just how dominant he may be on offense too, obviously, but more so on the defensive end. I thought that the Spurs, they had the best of defense in the league this year over the Warriors, right? And it's incredible how monumentally they collapsed without him on the defensive end. It's like their defense was an absolute joke. There's no semblance of, there's zero rim protection they had. None. They had no rim protection. These guys were just kind of, it was like, man, it looked like a pickup game. Warriors were doing whatever they wanted. And there's no way they would score on the Spurs that easily if Kawhi was in there. And it's kind of crazy how one guy who's mainly on the wings has that much of an influence on the defense. And, that made me really, really think a lot and kind of appreciate Kawhi Leonard's defense with a different kind of perspective, seeing what they weren't able to do without him.
That's really an excellent point. Kawhi Leonard, an MVP contender, and he's probably not going to win, but he had such an amazing year defensively as well, powering that number one defense. And yeah, he just makes such an impact that his absence and how the team played defensively, as you argued, really does say a lot about his impact. So I was getting to this a little earlier. I want to get your thoughts on the dominance of certain teams, super teams, if you will, if that's good or bad for the NBA, or if it's more nuanced, if it's somewhere in the middle. obviously it's great for ratings when you have these superstars and super teams, but as we alluded to earlier, the competitive imbalance bothers a lot of fans and franchises. So just weigh those two if you can for me.
Well, it seems like that is the way to go in terms of giving yourself a chance to win a championship. LeBron did it. The big three in Boston did it. You know, if you look at most of the teams that have won over the last 20 years or so, these are pretty much stacked teams, right? There are a couple of exceptions, like the Detroit Pistons. You know, it wasn't a team full of superstars. It was more like a collection of stars that kind of, they just had this unbelievable chemistry that kind of got them through. But for the most part, it's very star-heavy teams that went all the way and ended up winning. So I think this whole superstar teaming up, I mean, that's obviously nothing new. In terms of what the Warriors did, that's obviously super, super extreme. You're talking about a team that won, you know, an NBA record 73 wins, one of the most dominant teams of all time. And then they added one of the most dominant scorers of all time. So
crazy.
That's like a super, super exception. That would be like the Bulls with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen adding like a Larry Bird or something. You know, that's it's the equivalent to that. And I personally didn't want KD going to the Warriors. You know, I've been following the Warriors for as long as Curry's been on that team. And I love what they became because it was so organic. You know, it was four out of the five guys in their starting lineup were, you know, guys that they drafted. Curry, Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green. And Bogut, obviously they got him through the Monte Ellis trade. So to see how long this franchise suffered for as long as it did, and to rise up as far as they did organically the way they did, it was just so awesome. And, you know, I think everybody can agree that they were a much more fun team to watch. That being a part of the reason, but I thought it was like a perfect balance, you know, where everybody, there's no sacrificing for the most part. Everybody played their parts to the max to be the team that they were last year. And that kind of went away when KD joined the team. Now somebody has to sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
And somebody every game is usually going to have some kind of low output. You know, that's just the way it goes. There's, you know, that's what they were talking about when they acquired him. There's only one ball. And they were making jokes about that or whatever, but I think it's, I mean, you look at Klay Thompson against the Spurs. He averaged, I think 11 points?
It was pretty low for him, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. This guy, I think he averaged no less than 18 points last year in the playoffs against any team. So you're talking about a steep, steep drop-off for Klay. And that might have something to do with the coaching change. As Sam from Warriors World mentioned to me the other day about how Klay seems to play a lot better when Steve Kerr is on the sidelines rather than Mike Brown, because Mike Brown is allowing the team to play more freely and thereby allowing more pick and rolls, kind of letting the guys, you know, go a little rogue from the overall plan, which is constant movement everywhere, which they still do. But because it's more centered around the pick and roll, it seems like Klay is having perhaps more of a trouble getting into a rhythm. And he's been terrible. He shot like well under 40% against the Spurs.
When you're talking about sacrifice, I was thinking about Klay Thompson. I'm looking at it now. In the four games against the Spurs, he averaged 11 points per game and shot 32.7% from the field. In game one, he made two field goals. That was it. In game four, he made three field goals. This is Klay
Yeah, this is.
Thompson, one of the best shooters in the league.
He's right now, and I said this on Twitter. Not obviously, I'm not saying that that's what he is, but right now, it's almost like he's like a glorified Kyle Korver. You know, just a guy who catches and shoots, but he's not getting enough touches and he's not getting into a rhythm because maybe it's partly because of the style of play, but also because he has less of a responsibility to score with KD in there, you know?
Yeah, the thing you brought up about the coaching change just while Kerr is recovering is interesting. I should note, though, that the last two games of the Blazers series that Mike Brown was coaching, Klay Thompson did have a couple pretty good games. One of the ones, he wasn't shooting that efficiently, but he scored 24 points. And then game four against the Blazers, he had 18, made almost half of his shots.
Sure. I mean, you know, he's going to have good games. This is Klay Thompson we're talking about. He's a great player. You know, he's a max player for most teams. Max level player. That's what he is. And you know, you look at what he did against the Thunder last year, he averaged like 25, 26 points. So when you're telling me that, oh, he had a good game against the Blazers with 24 points or something like that, it's just like, was that like the best game that he's had? And if so, it's like,
that's a good point. Had,
like, he does not have the same prominent role that he had last year. And you know, that's part of having to sacrifice all of a sudden when you have more talent. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't necessarily want KD going to the Warriors, because it was a lot more fun when the Warriors were playing against them. For the Warriors, I think it's total overkill. we're seeing that right now in the playoffs, and I honestly think that they're going to make pretty quick work of the Cavaliers too.
Okay, we'll get more to that a little bit later. First, I just wanted to ask you, since we talked about Mike Brown, outside of how he's utilizing Klay Thompson or underutilizing, and how they're doing more pick and roll action, how do you think he's doing slotting in right now? Is, I don't know if interim head coach is technically what he'd be called, but that's essentially what he is, I guess, right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you think he's doing a good job for the most part, or is it just that the team is so good that it doesn't really matter?
Yeah, I mean, the team is so good. As long as the overall concept of what they do is the same, it's hard to mess that up unless you completely just go away from what they're doing and just go full-blown Mark Jackson-style ISO-based offense or something like that. In that case, I could see significant change in the way they play. But for the most part, one of the things that I've noticed about the Warriors when Kerr is not coaching the team is that they play much freer, much looser. Maybe it's partly because the assistant coaches have less of a say than a Steve Kerr. And one of the biggest differences is the way Draymond Green played. He plays super freely, and he becomes a much better shooter from the three-point line. I'm sure you've noticed that he is, for the most part, been converting at an alarming rate from the three-point line.
I know, and right? This season he was shot in the low 30s.
Oh, yeah. He shot – okay, so here's the thing. Last year when Luke was coaching the team for the first half of the season, Draymond Green was shooting well over 40% from the three-point line. I mean, that's half the season. That's pretty impressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as Steve Kerr came back, I think Kerr doesn't want Draymond to shoot as much as Draymond wants to shoot, just because he thinks there are better options, maybe. Because if you remember, Draymond had that big blow-up last year, soon after Kerr came back, against the Thunder, you know, in the locker room, talking about, I'm not a robot. If you don't want me to shoot, I won't shoot. You know, it was a big thing. And after that, his three-point shooting just went down the crappers. He ultimately, he ended up shooting like 38% or something like that overall last year. But he was at about 41% before Steve Kerr came back. And now you look at him, the way he's shooting in the playoffs, shot like 50% against the Blazers, well over 45% against the Jazz. He killed the Jazz with the three-point shooting. And obviously Spurs, being who they are, kind of helped limit his shooting a little more, but he still shot respectably, you know?
Yeah.
And when Draymond plays freely like that, I think the Warriors are virtually unstoppable. His confidence level is off the roof. He feels like he can do anything he wants on the floor, and he's kind of more successful in that way. Curry, in a way, too, you know, he seems to play more freely as well, thinking a little bit less about feeling like he has to move the ball constantly, as opposed to kind of, you know, calling a pick and roll and kind of deciding what he wants to do from there. So I think Mike Brown has done a good job overall managing, other than that one game where he just played Zaza forever and it was driving me crazy.
I know you're not behind the scenes here or in Steve Kerr's mind and you're not talking with his doctors or anything, but what's your indication of whether or not he'll return in the finals at some point?
Well, they said today, Bob Myers came out and said they don't know. He said as of right now, he can't coach. And the indications seem to be that he's not ready to go. And if he hasn't been ready to go for the past month, I kind of have my doubts about whether he's all of a sudden going to be ready in the next week.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is a life-altering issue that he's going through, and you hope that he, you know, gets through it. But, you know, he's the big thing is that he's still with the team. You know, you see him
right
during halftime, you know, shows or whatever, him talking to the team in the locker room. And, you know, I think it's very interesting to watch that dynamic where they're kind of listening to both him and Mike Brown. It's just kind of getting two different perspectives. And I think that's, it's good to see that at least, but it doesn't seem like Curry is ready to come back at this time.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. It's obviously his health is way more important than basketball. Just,
right.
I agree though with you that it is an interesting dynamic. When we were talking about Draymond Green, it brought up a question in my mind for me. As someone who's been a longtime fan of the Warriors and who's covered the team, do you think Draymond Green's outspokenness, both within the team and then just publicly with the media and whatnot, that just is the heart and soul of this team and franchise and is a large part of what makes them so fascinating besides the on-the-court product?
Oh, yeah, 100%. That Steve Kerr's been saying that, you know, since his first year, that he's the heart of the Warriors. And, you know, a heartbeat is what he called them. He's a heartbeat of the Warriors. And, you know, he's, I don't know about outspoken in terms of speak to the media. He's very eloquent. He's very thoughtful when he speaks. It's not talking trash and he's not saying a whole bunch of nonsense. You know, he's, a very reasonable and very intelligent human being when you listen to him speak. And, you know, and that kind of shows when you watch the way he plays the game on the floor. He's such a smart player, you know. You rarely see him make a bad decision. And just even looking at his assist to turnover ratio, what power forward, you know, handles the ball the way he does. I think he's averaging like a little over 7 assists and maybe like 2.2, 2.3 turnovers in the playoffs so far. I mean, that's ridiculous. From your power forward position, like it's like unheard of, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's 7.2 per game in the playoffs assists and actually only 2.0 turnovers. So
yeah, his decision-making is off the charts. His decision-making is just like, it comes so naturally to him. He knows exactly what to do with the ball. He might talk some trash. He might make some controversial plays here and there on the court sometimes, but for the most part, he plays with passion, unbelievable passion, every single possession. The guy doesn't take a possession off. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's true. So I know that you feel very confident in the Warriors winning the championship this year, and we don't know yet as of this recording, but they're likely to face the Cavaliers for a third straight year. So I know you are confident, but just in the case that they don't end up winning it all this year, given how dominant they've been over the last 3 years during the regular season, would that be a huge disappointment if they didn't come away with the title?
Would that be a huge disappointment if they don't come away with the title?
Yeah.
Man, I want to give you like a pop-esque answer right now to that question. Because, I mean, being disappointed would be the understatement of the century for a team who should have won the championship without KD. And to have KD and to not win it is practically inconceivable. Like, that's, if that happens, I don't know what the hell. I mean, I guess that, you know, the only way I see that happening is either one of Draymond Green or Steph Curry gets hobbled for one reason or another. Some kind of injury. That's the only way I see a possibility for the Cavs to somehow win it. Because that's what happened last year. Curry was hobbled. And they took full advantage of that. They exposed him with switches constantly. He couldn't do it. He kept fouling. He kept trying to use his hands instead of feet on defense, getting into foul trouble, just looking lost out there. He was awful. But he was hurt. He was playing hurt. He was nowhere near himself. Anybody who saw him throughout the year should know that. When NBA players are comparing him to the likes of a Michael Jordan, there was no hole in the way he played defense throughout the season. He's an excellent defender. And it made it appear in the finals as though he's an incapable defender.
Yeah.
So that's how far gone Curry was in terms of his health. That's obviously not the case this year. Mm-hmm. And as long as Draymond and Curry stays healthy, I don't see how the Cavaliers can beat the Warriors. I just don't see it.
When we had Andy Liu on the show, he's from Warriors World, earlier in the season, he was talking about the difference in the 2015-16 squad and the year before. Kerr kind of, he learned this year that going for the record, they already did it, and now it's more important to play the long game, and that they may have been fatigued in the NBA Finals. Do you think that could have also played a role last postseason, that they just ran out of gas at the end because they were going for the record?
No.
You don't buy that?
No, I completely disagree with that. To me, there's one reason and one reason only that they ended up losing.
That was Curry.
And that was during, what was it, game one? When Curry slipped on Multi-Unit Sweat right before the end of the first half of the game. And that's how he hurt his knee. That was the beginning of the end. They should have lost that series against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
They barely lost that escaped. Series. Yeah, that was they came back 3-1.
A miracle.
Yeah.
But, you know, Curry, he just wasn't the same. And when he's not the same, that team is not the same, especially defensively. This is why when people say, like, Curry is a bad defender, it annoys me, because you don't win 73 games if you have, like, a major defensive hole in your starting five. Anybody who plays basketball should know that, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a giant defensive hole, everybody has to constantly compensate for that. And, you do your best to hide that player or whatever. But, it's almost offensive. One playoff series against the Cavaliers, and made it seem like that was the case. Most people didn't even weren't even willing to accept the idea that Curry was playing hurt. Like, it was crazy to me. I had to fight off a lot of people saying that he's not hurt. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This guy, after what he did last year, you're telling me that this is a normal Steph? The guy couldn't drive past anybody. And that's his specialty, is driving by when they have a switch and a big guy on him. No big guy can stay in front of Steph, right? And you know, look, he couldn't get by Kevin Love for that three-point shot he took in Game 7 last year. I mean, come on. But anyway, so I would say that fatigue had nothing to do with what happened last year. It largely has to do with the fact that their best player was compromised. And then in the finals, you know what happened there. Draymond Green gets suspended, and then Bogut gets hurt. That was the big, you know, series changer. They lost their, you know, center, and all of a sudden they were getting dominated, and they tried to go with the death lineup where they start Andre Iguodala for, I think, both games 6 and 7. But to be perfectly clear, there is no death lineup that Steph Curry is not Steph Curry. He is what allows them to unlock what is called, what they call a death lineup.
I want to ask you, though, about Kyrie Irving's impact, because he barely played in the first finals matchup between the teams. He played last year and was really good. And for whatever deficiencies the Cavaliers have, I think namely defense, and they're also not getting, I think, the offensive contributions from guys beyond LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love as much as they might need in a finals matchup against the Warriors. Some would argue that Kyrie Irving being healthy is something that should scare the Warriors. Why does that not concern you?
It's not that it doesn't concern me. Kyrie is obviously one of the best scoring point guards in the league. So any team should be very wary of him. I mean, I thought he was not a good defender, but if it's like a one-on-one situation, I think he is a very capable one-on-one defender. I don't know about when you put him in action, though, like a pick and roll, when guys are setting screens and he has to be constantly moving, getting switched on to maybe for Klay Thompson or something like that. I don't think the Warriors don't worry about him. They will definitely game plan for him, and they probably won't completely stop him. He'll probably have a decent series for sure.
Just before I let you go, again, I really appreciate you joining me. I want to get your thoughts on something that you're really looking forward to watching in this year's finals that people may overlook or not pay attention to, some subtlety or intricacy of the games or of the matchups that you'd like to highlight right now?
I'm looking forward to seeing Curry have a redemption in the finals, because right now the reputation is that he's not very good in the finals. And that wasn't necessarily true in his first year there. He had one really bad game when Dellavedova started, you know, he had to start because Irving was hurt, and he was just ultra aggressive. They were letting him just bump him around all over the place. And Curry had a really rough game. What was it, like Game 3 or something like that?
I think it was Game 2.
I think he had maybe 2 bad games. But overall, he ended up dominating. And, you know, he kind of dictated what the Warriors were going to do. And Andre Iguodala was hitting all those, you know, open threes, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he ended up eventually winning the finals MVP. But what people kind of, I guess, chose to forget about is, like, why was he that open? Why was he so wide open? When a guy is that open and he's got a rhythm, he's probably going to hit that shot. And Iguodala did his part in hitting the shot, but he was getting those shots because I don't know if necessarily the Cavaliers were giving it as much as they had no choice, because they had to double Curry. they had to double him off the pick and roll. And then, you know, from there, Draymond gets the ball, and then Draymond makes, you know, the best decision he can. But basically, they're playing 3-on-4 at that point, right? And they did a lot of that when they went with the death lineup in the first finals. And so to me, he didn't have a bad finals in the first year, but it wasn't, you wouldn't call it spectacular either, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we know him as, a spectacular player. And obviously last year was an absolute disaster. His stock took such a huge hit. I mean, we probably saw that with even Under Armour too. They're so heavily reliant on how he performs on the court. And yeah, I think I'm really looking forward to seeing how he plays now that he's on this role and he's healthy for the most part. And you know, he's locked in and ready to go. And it'll also be interesting to see how the whole LeBron James versus KD thing plays out. You know, whether they'll guard each other and how that will work out.
Yeah, and, I think saying it's going to be a fun rematch is an understatement. So many people are looking forward to it. I know I certainly
am. Hopefully. Because you got to remember, the Warriors, they were up 3-1 before all that crazy stuff happened last year without KD. And, you know, obviously some turn of events changed everything, but assuming stuff like that doesn't happen again, assuming Draymond doesn't knock LeBron and the jewels again, doesn't get suspended and all this stuff, it could end up, if you remember, LeBron was kind of, he disappeared for the first 3-4 games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no guarantee that that's not going to happen again. The Cavs don't really do very well when Draymond is anchoring that defense. So, and that goes both for LeBron and Kyrie.
Yeah, I saw the split stats in the finals last year with Draymond on and off the court, which was very telling.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a joke. So yeah, you know, I know a lot of people are anticipating a lot of excitement, and it could be, and I hope so. I wouldn't be surprised either if it ends up being quote unquote boring, as a lot of people are saying about the playoffs right now, because they could end up treating the Cavs in a similar kind of way that they're treating everyone else in the playoffs.
I'll let you go now. Thanks again for joining me. It was really great.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for having me.
Enjoy the final.
All right, thank you too, man.